Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Allsvenska Sirius skakas av en dopningsskandal. Målvakten Joshua Wicks testades positivt för dopning efter premiären mot Hammarby. Han hade spår av kokain i urinet. Uppsala-lagets första målvakt kommer nu att lämna klubben.
Även om diskussionen om doping förekommer inom fotboll kan blåsa upp med jämna mellanrum. Som exempelvis i samband med Sirius målvakten Joshua Wicks avstängning förra våren, så har den egentligen haft svårt att få rejält fäste i en fotbollsvärld som länge menat att doping inte är ett större problem inom fotboll då det inte ger utövaren tillräckligt stora fördelar. Just fallet Wicks är väl på något sätt ett sådant med tanke på att han tog kokain och därmed inte för att bli bättre på fotboll. Möjligen har också dopingaffärerna därför varit få inom fotbollen. Men de senaste åren har allt fler pekat på att det möjligtvis är en bristfällig provtagning och ett rätt dåligt samarbete mellan fotbollens organ FIFA och antidopingbyrån WADA som gjort att inte fler fotbollsspelare kontrollerats och möjligen då också avslöjats som dopade. Dagens poddgäst, den tyske journalisten Hajo Seppelt, har gjort en rad stora dopingavslöjanden de senaste åren. Han ger inte så mycket för myten att fotbollsspelare inte skulle gynnas av doping.
It's very easy because you need power and endurance. If you have, for example, in minute 90 of a soccer or football game, you need to run from the midfield to the penalty area. You need to run very fast. People who claim that doping has no effect in football, they have no idea.
Hajo Seppelt har bevakat doping i över 10 år och jobbat för tyska ARD och släppt böcker, dokumentärer och nyhetsinslag och verkligen skakat om i idrottsvärlden och bidragit till både avstängningar och mycket uppmärksamhet. Han ifrågasätter om Internationella olympiska kommittén, FIFA och andra stora organisationer, förbund och klubbar verkligen är så speciellt intresserade av att ta reda på hur det egentligen ligger till med doping inom idrotten.
If you see that, let's say that chain of dependencies, I would say at the bottom line there is no real interest by federations for decades to challenge doping seriously. The best thing for them is to avoid the public debate about doping. That helps, and that is a win-win situation for everybody.
Hajo Seppelt var en av dem som skakade om den ryska idrotten med en rad avslöjanden gällande doping. Och frågan har återigen aktualiserats under hösten med tanke på att vissa data som lämnats från den ryska antidopingorganisationen till WADA visat sig vara manipulerade. Och WADA har nu flaggat för att man kan komma med en rekommendation att Ryssland inte ska få vara med i OS i Tokyo nästa sommar och kanske att man inte heller får anordna mästerskap, vilket skulle kunna få konsekvenser för UEFA och sommarens EM-slutspel där flera matcher ska spelas i Sankt Petersburg.
With respect to the WADA rules, it's completely clear that if they say that the exclusion from Russia as host for big events comes from WADA, then UEFA, for example, has to decide what they will do, and they will come under enormous pressure, I can imagine.
Utöver detta pratar vi om hans avslöjande som ledde till att två ryska spelare lämnades utanför VM-truppen inför hemma-VM 2018. Om varför Ryssland portade honom från VM 2018 och varför han sen inte vågade åka dit när han väl fått ett visum. och vad han tycker om Sveriges svansföring i dopingfrågan och vad som krävs för att frågan ska hamna ännu högre upp på dagordningen. Och dessutom ger han sin syn på sportjournalistiken och vad som krävs av framtida sportjournalister. Men vi börjar som vanligt podden med en faktaruta.
Age?
56.
Where do you live?
In Berlin.
Family?
No.
Education?
I did my Abitur in German in between my school exam. Then I went to university for a couple of years, but then I stopped and became a journalist. I was 21.
Salary?
Yes, I have a salary.
Car?
I have a BMW.
Hobbies?
I like to go to sauna. I like to go to the movies regularly. I have a dog. And I like to meet with friends. I go regularly in restaurants. I like fine dining. So,
what languages do you speak?
I speak German, as you can imagine, English, more or less fluently, a little French, and I understand Spanish and Italian.
Which is your favorite sport and why?
To be honest, I'm not a sport fan, so I'm not watching sports on television regularly, but I don't, or I do it just for professional reasons. But if I'm watching, because, for example, when I'm at the Olympics, and I need to, the best is athletics.
Which sport did you do as a young
person? I was a swimmer.
What was the biggest triumph?
Which is a funny thing. I was living in West Berlin, and I'm born 63, and we had youth championships, and every year of birth counted in the competition. So when I was 18, I had three finals: 100 meter breaststroke, 200 meter breaststroke, and 200 IM. And I became 3 times West Berlin champion for the year 1963. But the bad thing is that in 2 of the 3 competitions, I had no competitor at all.
But still, you could only win. Which is the biggest experience you've had with sports?
The best experience, I think sports is a cultural good. So I did marathon running, but not as a professional, as an amateur, in the early 2000 years. And I did that more or less also for television, because they accompanied me for half a year to show my preparation as a normal person, becoming a marathon runner for half a year, training, practice, medical support, whatever, no doping, by the way. Yeah, that was a very interesting experience, but the much better one was when I was running the marathon. It was a Berlin marathon, and the crowd was huge, and it was really very exciting to do that. But my experience came afterwards, because I thought that if I'm able to run, and it's so easy to prepare in half a year, why shouldn't I ask other people to do the same? So we invented a runner's movement in Berlin, and we presented it also on television and radio, and I was more or less a key figure, let's say it this way, and we motivated the people to run, and in collaboration with a Berlin-based club, we invited people to run, and every weekend we had 500, maybe more sometimes, sometimes less, people running with us together through the heart of Berlin. And this was not for competition, this was not for winning, this was just for the cultural good of sports. And it was very, very motivating to see all the people getting excited because of just simply running.
Which leader in sports do you admire?
Currently, I don't know anybody who I would admire.
Which medias covering sports do you read or watch?
As I said, I'm not watching television, sports and television, so I'm not so much interested, so there's no favorite.
What was your best subject in school?
I was good in French, by the way. not very good, but decent, on a decent level maybe. I was always interested in politics and history, so this has been my favorite.
Which has been your toughest crisis?
In my life, yes. I was not always in a very healthy condition, not always, but I don't want to talk about it publicly. But now, at least I hope I'm healthy and everything is fine.
When was the latest time you were really happy?
With my dog just a couple of days ago.
When did you cry last time?
In the movies. I'm a very emotional person, so sometimes it happens that I begin to cry when I'm in a cinema and I see very emotional moments.
Which talent would you like to have?
I would like to cook and I would like to play the piano.
Cyprus 0, Russia 5. And there is the full-time whistle, and Russia can celebrate taking their place at UEFA Euro 2020.
Ryssland blev tidigt klart för sommarens EM-slutspel och man har ju dessutom matcher hemma i Sankt Petersburg. Men fjolårets VM-värdar ska kanske inte jubla riktigt än. Härom veckan kom nämligen uppgifter om att det internationella dopingkontrollorganet WADA på nytt kan komma med en rekommendation att ryska idrottare bör stängas av från idrott och att då Ryssland kan fråntas rätten att arrangera mästerskap. En rekommendation som förvisso inte är tvingande men som ändå kommer sätta press på UEFA inför sommarens EM-slutspel.
Lately, you've had information about Russia and manipulating data concerning doping, and now it's talk about missing the Olympics in Tokyo and even the Euros 2020 in football. What do you think will happen?
I simply don't know for sure what is the recommendation by the WADA Compliance Review Committee for the WADA Executive Committee, which will meet next couple of weeks on the 9th of December in Paris. But having in mind that it was already said publicly and has never been successfully challenged by the Russians from what I heard, we have to expect that a strong recommendation will be made by the Compliance Review Committee. And if it's really on a really huge or worrying level of manipulation and deletion of lab data, I can very well imagine that they will ask for the worst punishment, which is a ban for athletes from big competitions, which would include the Olympic Games. So it's on the horizon currently that we can expect that a recommendation will be made to exclude Russia from the Tokyo Olympics.
What do you think about the European Championship in football?
That is a different thing because it's not a must, it's a can rule. So I wouldn't expect for now that this will really happen. But there's another option that in the catalogue of possible sanctions, that Russia has not the right to host big events, and that means also to host the UEFA European Championships. That means St. Petersburg, for example, might be dropped at a later stage, but this is, as I said, a can and not a must.
What is it that the Russians have done?
Maybe I have to add this rule comes from UEFA, so there's a different thing. We have to see the WADA rules and we have to see the UEFA rules, so a little bit complicated. But with respect to the WADA rules, it's completely clear that if they say that the exclusion from Russia as host for big events comes from WADA, then UEFA, for example, has to decide what they will do, and they will come under enormous pressure, I can imagine.
These accusations against the Russians, what have they done?
It looks like that, according to the news I have and the information I have, that data which have been provided to WADA as one of the preconditions for a reinstatement have been manipulated, or have been at least changed in a way which is not explainable for the WADA experts, and say have been able to check and to compare their information with the information they received from Russia. And obviously in the lab data there have been manipulations, there have been deletions, and maybe even worse. And they could compare different, let's say, images or data they are aware of or are in possession of, and there have been really dramatic changes. What I heard, we talk about maybe even more than 1,000 or even more changes, and these changes are related to athletes. That means there is a high suspicion that these manipulations have been done in order to cover up doping cases from Russian athletes.
How old are these data?
The data, they are from 2012 to 2015.
How was this discovered?
There was a big discussion going on for years about should RUSADA, the Russian anti-doping agency, should be suspended or not. And then they lifted the suspension in 2018, but they had one precondition, one important precondition among others. And this precondition was Russia has to provide these lab data until the end of 2018. They didn't, they failed in December 2018, but then later, 2 weeks later, they provided the data to WADA after enormous pressure coming from other people in the anti-doping community worldwide. To provide this data, this was one requirement in order to keep the compliance from RUSADA, which was given to them or was granted to them in September 2018. And now we have the data, but it was not only about providing the data. It was clear that they have to provide authentic data, and now it looks like that they are not authentic, and that means it looks like that they tried to cheat again. And if that is the case, that is a really, really serious break of the conditions. And from my point of view, if that happens, there is only one answer, one strong answer, needed consequence, which means they have to get sanctioned, or they have to at least get punished in a very serious way. Otherwise, WADA would lose a lot of trust in the public domain again.
Who do you think is responsible for this manipulation?
We simply don't know. I cannot imagine that RUSADA itself is responsible, because from a technical and legal perspective, it's simply not possible that they have been in charge of these data, because they have not the authority, they have not the competence, they have not, by legal terms, they have not the access to these data. How can they manipulate them? It doesn't make any sense. So this manipulation must come from other parties in Russia. And having in mind and remembering what happened in 2014 at the Sochi Olympics, where the FSB, that means Secret Service, the Russian Secret Service within the country, was manipulating the process of doping controls in Sochi 2014, there might be an explanation also for nowadays that they have been involved.
Why does IOC hesitate of suspending Russia?
The IOC is not responsible for suspending Russia. This is now in the hands of WADA because of new regulations, because of the new WADA code. And this can be challenged by the Russians in a case at the International Court of Arbitration, CAS, in Lausanne. That means, officially, IOC has nothing to say in that process. But it looks like that they have enormous influence, and Thomas Bach, the IOC president from Germany, made it very clear that they are against a blanket ban for Russia. They are in favor of just punishing individuals. But to be honest, punishing individuals doesn't work at all, because if the system doesn't work, from my point of view, you have to sanction, you have to punish the system. And to the system, athletes belong, unfortunately. So that means at the very end, from my point of view, from my understanding, Russian athletes who might have been not involved in a doping system, they must complain to their own officials, to their own officials in Russia who made this mess, and not to the IOC, not to WADA, not to other international federations. The responsibility is in Russia and not in other countries.
Why do you think Thomas Bach wants to go after individuals instead of Russia?
That he's arguing that we cannot have collective punishments because athletes are not responsible for the failure of officials. But how can you trust a system? How can you trust an anti-doping system if the whole system is failing? And that means also there's a general suspicion allowed toward athletes, because you never know what has been done with the athletes. So that is a big, big problem. But I can imagine, I know Thomas Bach for many, many years, not personally in a good way, but I experienced him as reporting about him and the policy of IOC for many, many years. So the usual strategy is he is avoiding conflicts with big influential parties, and Russia is as you know, the biggest country in the world with enormous influence in sports. And there have been many, many strong ties between the IOC and Russia and the former Soviet Union for decades. Strong relations to Russia, many officials sitting in important positions within international federations. There's a strong connection also to Putin. Bach praised always Russian efforts regarding the Olympics. Remember how he praised the Sochi Olympics in 2014. Some people say there are some skeletons in the Kremlin basement, which we don't know about, which might explain the obvious, mild approach by the IOC towards Russia.
You have a long career, a lot of revelations about doping, and you had in 2014 the doping top secret, how Russia makes the winners and all that, and how has the sport reacted to all these scandals?
They had to react. They became under enormous pressure. And my feeling is that journalism, sports journalism, is just a part of real normal journalism. Needs to focus also on the other side of the medal. That's how I express it always. And this time, as revelations and the suspicion and the hints and the proofs have been so overwhelming that there was no alternative. They had to react. But when they reacted, it showed also how weak the system is. I remember Craig Reedy, the WADA president, more or less out of the radar, he had close contacts to the Russian politicians and tried to play down the whole thing. You can see that in very telling emails, or at least in one very telling email. We have seen Thomas Bach and the IOC and other people in the IOC in Bach's entourage who tried to play down the extent of the whole thing. That was my feeling, at least, and my impression about all what happened. We have seen what happened before Rio 16. We have seen the charade in Pyeongchang and before Pyeongchang, when the IOC officially sanctioned the Russian Olympic Committee, but allowed Russian athletes to participate with shirts and training suites and symbols, not the Russian symbol itself, but so-called Olympic athletes from Russia. So where I would ask the question, is that a neutral status when you see everywhere, on every shirt, Olympic athlete from Russia? From my point of view, this was a very weak punishment. And as you remember, just 2 days after the Olympics in Pyeongchang, they have been reinstated. So I don't see that was a really harsh punishment. And I strongly believe that if the IOC and the whole sports world would have reacted in a much more severe and strong way, maybe we wouldn't face the situation we face now.
You've covered a lot of sports, swimming, cycling, and things like that. What's your view about that the sports are still thriving, even though scandals? I mean, Tour de France, a lot of winners have been using doping, but still people watch it.
Why shouldn't people watch it? Sports is entertaining, so I believe that they have their right to do that. But they have also to accept that sometimes journalists come around the corner and tell them bad stories, because journalists are not doing their job in order to promote sports or to entertain people. That is not my job. My job is to tell the truth, and that means that we tell both sides of the story. One story part is the competition itself. It is winning and losing. That's the way it is. That's classical, more or less. That's how sports is. The other side is what happens behind the back doors, what's happening behind the scenes. And we have to tell that story, and that's what we are doing. And so I don't see any contradiction that both things have to be played, have to be shown, have to be illustrated, have to be written, have to be covered by television.
In Sweden, we often cover doping in other countries, but we don't always believe that Swedish athletes use illegal substances. What's your view of Sweden and Swedish athletes?
To be honest, I'm not so much involved in Swedish sports, so I can not really judge it seriously. What I would say more in general is that doping is not mainly a question of mentality or a question of good or bad people. It belongs to a system. So you have to see the framework in countries. If you have an autocratic country, for example, which allows officials and functionaries to work secretly behind the curtains, then you have better possibilities to do doping than in other countries. And in countries in Western or Northern Europe, we have more, let's say, more democratic structures. We have more control from the outside. We have more serious and critical media accompanying sports. I don't say that 100% of the media are doing that, but at least more than in other countries. There's more public debate about doping, so that makes it maybe more complicated and more risky to people to manipulate, to cheat in sports. In other countries like Russia, like China, for example, I see big loopholes for people to escape, to run away with doping, and I see the risk of a big cover-up in these countries bigger than in other countries. So that might explain why in some countries we don't have so many doping positive cases, and in other countries we have them. But I would never say that Swedish people are better people than Germans or Russians. That is not the case. And also the opposite is not the case. What I want to say is it's not a question of personal characters always. It's also a systematic question. What sport gives you, what allows you, how it is controlled, that might make a difference.
How do you avoid being disillusioned by sports?
I'm disillusioned by sports. I don't need to be a fan. I'm not a fan. I'm a journalist. Yeah, and I see the bigger picture. And for me, the story of doping and the history of doping is more or less also a story of cover-up, maybe even more cover-up than doping itself. Because if you see the history of sports for decades now, then you see individuals who have been caught cheaters, and then you see the big headlines in newspapers, this guy is doped, this guy is caught. But this doesn't explain the whole story, because for doping you need always people who cover it up. And if you see the East German system, if you see China, if you see Russia, if you see also Kenya nowadays, and maybe other countries, there have been many people who covered up the doping and who helped the athletes to manipulate. So we talk about systematic things. And why did that happen? It happened because if doping remains undetected, everybody has a benefit. The athlete himself, higher sponsor contracts, more money as a winner of a competition, more prize money, more awards. That means also for the sports agent, for the manager, he has more benefit because he gets a certain percentage of the money. Good for the organizer of an event because he has more spectators in the stadium because the sport is more attractive. Good for him because he gets more sponsors because the TV airing time is longer. So all the advertisement in the stadium will be seen longer. That means they can sell their products better. Everyone has a benefit. The sponsors have a profit. Television ratings getting higher, so they can sell their commercial TV commercials at higher prices. The federation gets more money from the state, has more sponsors. Everybody has a benefit. The doctors, the trainers with safe contracts, working contracts, the physios, everybody. If it stays undetected, that means it's a win-win situation for everybody. But now imagine an investigative journalist comes, or a state prosecutor or police guy, and they expose doping. Then the win-win situation becomes a lose-lose situation for everybody, because everybody loses. So I ask the question, who has the real interest to expose doping? If you see that, let's say, that chain of dependencies, I would say at the bottom line, there is no real interest by federations for decades to challenge doping seriously. The best thing for them is to avoid the public debate about doping. That helps, and that is a win-win situation for everybody. And so I have also always my doubts to believe that people in federations have really a really serious interest to challenge and to fight doping, because it's not good for the business.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Both analysis of the urine sample have proved to be positive. The player Diego Maradona of the Argentinian national team has therefore violated the provisions of the doping control regulations in the match Argentina-Nigeria.
Även om Diego Maradonas dopingavstängning vid VM 1994 ruskade om fotbollsvärlden rejält, så ledde det knappast till att dopingfrågan hamnade högre upp på dagordningen. Snarare används händelsen som ett exempel på att FIFA hade dopingfrågan under kontroll. Och som brukligt när fotbollsspelare dopat sig avfärdades det som ett enskilt fall, snarare än ett tecken på systematiskt fusk. Och den inställningen lever fortfarande kvar, trots att det funnits starka indikationer på att klubbar som Juventus och Marseille sysslat med just systematisk dopning under perioder.
I work mostly with football, and sometimes there's a discussion that there are not that many doping cases in football. Some people say it's because FIFA and WADA don't really work together. What's your view, since there are not that many cases?
As you know, football is a very, very rich sport. Billions and billions and billions of euros and dollars are circulating around the world, around the globe. So they have enough money to do good doping testing. In fact, FIFA has improved, but we are far away from a really effective good doping control system in football. For example, one example, the regular doping testing in football, the regular means that at least until 2018, I don't know the current data, but only 10% of the regular doping tests have been done on EPO. So that means 90% of regular testing is not done on EPO. And you know that is very important for endurance. And you need endurance also in football. So that explains you, for example, why maybe not so many people are getting caught. On the other hand, you have to say that football is also a doping sport, and people who claim that doping has no effect in football, they have no idea, and this is only...
What would be the benefits?
It's very easy because you need power and endurance. If you have, for example, in minute 90 of a soccer or football game, you need to run from the midfield to the I don't know the English word, to the area of where the penalty area. Yeah, penalty area. You need to run very fast. And if you have a pulse of 180, then it's not so easy if you have only 130 or 150. So with EPO, you can improve your endurance capacities. So it makes sense. And if you have a lower pulse and a lower heartbeat, it allows you to be more focused, more concentrated. You have more power, you have more capacity, so you can dribble better. You have better technical capacities, which you have to have anyway, but if you are in a good, healthy and condition in football, it helps you. It helps in every sport. So also doping makes sense in football. Yeah, if you have more power, then you can jump higher. It's very easy. And so there are a lot of good and easy explanations, and the history of doping in football makes clear that people use doping. Look at Juventus Turin, look at Olympique Marseille. Look at cases in Brazil and South America. There are a lot of cases, but they are not discussed so much in the public domain.
How come that football as an industry has kept doping at arm's length distance?
As I said, it's not good for the business. Yeah. Doping is destroying the business model of modern high professional sports, not only in football.
Before the World Cup 2018, the Swedish squad was tested by FIFA, and the goalie who played in France said that in two seasons in the French top division, no doping tests.
That's typical. That explains a lot.
But you had a story before the World Cup in 2018 about the Russian player who then didn't make it on the squad, that he had
Kambarov.
that he had been taking doping. How come that wasn't bigger story and that FIFA didn't grab a hold of it?
As I said, to talk too much about doping is not good for the business. That's what I can say. It's not the main concern. The main concern that the party goes on. That's what they want. And doping disturbs the business. And so anti-doping also, and doping headlines even more. It's not in their interest because they want to run the show. As every branded said regarding the Olympics, the show must go on. It was another context, but it's more or less fitting also to this issue.
How come that the WADA, who regulates the doping controls, and the FIFA don't work that well together?
Because that's what I can only speculate, but maybe they don't want and they take a too deep look into their books. But I don't know.
You were... After that story you did about the doping in Russia for World Cup 2018, you first didn't get a visa for the World Cup, then you get one, but you never went. How was the situation? How was the reactions from Russia towards you?
I was asking in early 2018 on behalf of ARD for a visa, and it was granted to me. And then in May 2018, when I was more or less ready to travel, I was about to leave Germany more or less in a couple of days, they called me and told me I shouldn't travel because they will not allow me to get in when I'm at the Moscow airport, so I shouldn't fly. That came from the Russian embassy in Germany, and they more or less excused and said sorry for this, but obviously some people have said that this visa is not valid anymore. So That was the beginning of the story. It means for me, some Russians, because of my coverage, and later it was confirmed that this was the reason, didn't want me to work during the World Cup in Russia. But this was really very embarrassing for the Russians, because obviously there have been two different parties working at the same time in different directions, because some people in Russia obviously didn't like what I was doing for years with respect to Russia, and other people knew that there have been very strong regulations set by FIFA that every journalist has to be allowed to enter Russia during the World Cup. So at a later stage, they granted me the visa again, but told me it's only temporarily for the FIFA World Cup. Later, ARD and some people in, let's say, in the German security area, coming from the Federal Office of Criminal Investigations in Germany, they said that it might be not a good idea to travel to Russia for security reasons. So later, ARD decided that I don't go to Russia.
How is the situation with threats today? I mean, you have security with you when you travel?
I don't want to comment that publicly.
Looking into IOC, which has been reformed, and also FIFA say that they have been reformed. What's your view of these organizations? Have they really been reformed?
I don't want to comment too much on FIFA because this is not my working field, at least not with respect to the changes within FIFA. What I can say about the general structure of Olympic sports for decades, and that means we are coming to the Olympics or we are coming to the international federations in general, I would say that we have a lack of democracy in sports, that the athletes' rights are not represented in the way it should be, because athletes are the core of sports. Without athletes, sports wouldn't work. I know all so-called important speeches of people like Thomas Bach at opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games, for example, or other opportunities where they claim always that athletes are the most important figures in the sports. I don't see that this is reflected in their representation within sports. I see it from a different perspective. I think athletes who are training every day 8 or 10 hours, who spend, let's say, a quarter of their life only for sports, and really spending very much time and efforts into sports in order to represent their country. They do that because they want to do it, but on the other hand, there is a lot of pressure on them, and for years they don't have any other things to do. They have to fully focus on sports. There's no real education possible at the same time in many countries for many people, for many athletes. They don't get a real financial benefit for that. And I see that this is like a relation between, let's say, people in a company or in an enterprise, in a factory, let's say, this is where they need a union. They need someone who's representing them independently, and not within the sports system. But at the moment, it looks like that all the athlete representatives are under the umbrella of sports. Not all of them, because there are new developments currently going on. But in general, I see that it doesn't work. You need to get independent athletes representatives outside the sports federations in order to be able to represent and to defend your rights as an athlete. And we are at the beginning, from my point of view, of a new development in sports, and it's very interesting to watch that and to see that how it's getting more and more independent, and how much pressure is now on the IOC to deal with that new issue in sports.
If you look at sports being used by countries like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, China, kind of like sports washing, how could federations or IOC or FIFA or UEFA, how could they keep those regimes at a distance?
As you have seen in the last couple of years, there have been developments which I don't believe that they are good. You can say on one hand that the IOC and FIFA has an interest to go to countries where they have never been before. That means to open new markets and also to bring their sports to a really international global audience, which is, from my point of view, understandable. What I don't understand and what I don't respect is that they talk about human rights, they talk about individual rights, they talk about, let's say, the freedom of individuals. And FIFA has now adopted its rules also with respect to human rights. The IOC is also under enormous pressure, but it looks like that it's for them 10 times more easy to go to countries where you don't have a democratic system, where you don't have referendums, where you don't have long bureaucracies for years in order to make things happen. It's easier for them if you have things more under control. So to go to China, for example, or to go to Qatar, to other similar countries with a lack of democracy, at least from our European perspective, that makes things for them easier. So you see, or I see, a clear contradiction between what they claiming and what they are doing. And one example is the recent athletics championships in Doha, where you have seen people more or less collapsing during the marathon, even at midnight. It was obviously very hard for athletes to compete under these conditions. And if you, for example, see that the FIFA World Cup was awarded to Qatar several years ago by knowing that it's completely impossible to do football tournament within the summer period in Qatar, and they obviously said we don't care and we do it, and then afterwards they discussed it and finally they postponed it to the winter season. It's for me, it's just shocking that people who really have enormous responsibility are not able to make reliable decisions.
Who would you say is responsible to change this direction? Is it sponsors? Is it TV companies that you and I rep?
TV companies have the right, have the possibility, let's say, not the right, the possibility to do that, because we pay with our TV rights that they can do their business. Without TV rights and the enormous prizes we have to pay for that, the IOC and the football wouldn't be able to do that, what they are doing. It's not only advertisement, it's TV rights. That's a big market. So there would be, let's say, a leverage in order to make changes within the sports system. But as I said, they are always dependent, and also TV networks are very much interested in high ratings. They want to have sports entertainment, so to a certain degree, as they are sitting the same boat as the IOC and FIFA, and that makes it complicated. We have a clear conflict of interest. I say we are journalists. Even if we as TV people pay TV rights, we have nothing to do with these guys. We are not partners. We are not partners. We are maybe moving to a certain degree in the same direction when it comes to presenting a sports event. But we have different interests, that we need to have different interests. And I am really strongly refuse any attempt by sports federations, and that happens more or less regularly, to say that we are sitting in the same boat. We are not sitting in the same boat.
It's kind of interesting. You were a commentator of swimming, and you were kind of critical of how your TV channel didn't take doping seriously enough, and you kind of left. How was that, going against your own company in a way?
I was a swimming commentator, that's correct. I was part of the entertainment industry for a couple of years. I had a different approach in my mind, but I didn't expose it, let's say it this way. Maybe I was too young, maybe because I thought at that point I have to play the game with the others. But I became more critical, and when I started to criticize the way we are covering sports, I had a lot of resistance in my own company. And I realized more and more that this is not the way I want to do that anymore. So in 2005, 2006, some other journalists founded a network of critical sport journalists in Germany, and I was a member of this group. And one of my emails, which I wrote internally in that circle, more or less confidentially, was published from somebody, not deliberately, but it was really, believe it or believe it not, it was a copy and paste mistake, but with big consequences for me. And at the very end, good consequences, I have to say, but at the beginning, bad consequences, because at that point, we had a completely different coverage in German television with respect to background reporting. There was more or less nothing. And more or less, we promoted cycling in Tour de France, for example. We have been not critical enough, from my point of view, with respect to FIFA and the FIFA 2006 World Cup in Germany. There was no real critical reporting on that. And I criticized that in one of these emails. And ARD at that point, as I said, was very different compared to nowadays. So they sued one really very open critic in Germany, a guy from Heidelberg, a professor who was always fighting for anti-doping in Germany, and they sued him and said, you cannot say that about ARD, that you say we are not really, shut our eyes towards doping, so or close our eyes. So he said that, and they sued him. And then there was a court hearing, in I think it was in Munich, and then he opened his briefcase and took out my email and said, look, you have... In your own company, you have someone who is confirming what I say, and that was for them not very nice. And later they decided that I'm not a swimming commentator, cannot be anymore. They said there have been other arguments because they had a very good live commentator. They wanted to replace me because he was now in ARD, but the other reason was, and I guess it was also a very important reason, they said, you can concentrate on doping and not anymore on that what maybe you don't like so much. You can do what you like. And then that my feeling was clear that they don't want me to work anymore. But then by a coincidence, the Fuentes case came up with Jan
Spanish Ulrich. Doctor.
Yes, a Spanish doctor. So they then in this moment they had to keep what they promised. That means now they had a doping story and they needed somebody who was doing that. So finally they asked me to do the investigative part on Fuentes. And we did in 2006 and with more or less success. And then they realized, okay, this part of sports journalism is not that bad. It is good. It is also necessary. And the dialectic development was then that in 2006, the sports boss of ARD was fired for other reasons. And then they had the good idea to establish an anti-doping editorial team in ARD starting 2007 and asked me to join it. So that was the beginning of the work I'm doing now.
What would you like to see more from sports journalists?
I think we need more intellectual approach in sports journalism. It's not enough to entertain. It's not enough to cover sports. We are not sitting in the same boat. We are not moving in the same direction. We are maybe at some degree, as I said, we are moving in the same direction, but that doesn't mean that we have the same interests. We need to separate clearly TV rights discussions from journalism. Clearly, this is a completely different thing. There shouldn't be no connection. We need tougher people. We need people who have more courage, courageous journalists, and who not celebrate sports, because we are not here for celebrating something, not in journalism and politics, not in economics, not in sports, not in culture, never, never, nowhere. We journalists have only one determination, that is independent reporting, independent coverage, independent research and investigation. That's the role of journalism in societies, and that's what we need to play.
By celebrating, you mean in the coverage of sporting events? You mean that you shouldn't do that, or?
I'm happy that we cover sports. Totally happy. That's not because, as I said, it's a cultural good. The only question is how we do that. How we do that. Covering Olympics, it's important because, as I said, it's very important. It's a cultural good. So let's do that. The question is how we do it. And as I said, commenting sports is fine, but give people more information about athletes, give them more background, but don't celebrate them as heroes. That's not our role. Our role is not to celebrating a politician as a hero and not a sportsman as a hero. That's not what we have to do, from my point of view.
What are the reactions you get from your coverage from people around? My picture is that most people want to have the celebration part of sports and not the other side.
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't care. If we have, let's say, 80% or 60% or 90% of people who don't like what I'm doing, I don't care. Because I'm not doing that because I want to entertain the people. I don't want to become a friend of whoever it is. The only thing what I have to do is to draw or to show the whole picture. That's what I have to do. And even if people don't like it, that can happen. That's what I have in focus.
The world of sports can sometimes be a little bit closed. How important is it to have whistleblowers, as you had in your investigation in doping in Russia?
Maybe I should add one thing.
Yeah.
Knowing that maybe we just represent a minority of people who are really interested in sports background coverage or investigative journalism, I have a feeling that in the last couple of years, the number of people who appreciated what we have done and what we are still doing is getting higher and higher. That there is a certain development in the new direction. People, in times of social media or fake news, whatever, they need substantial information. And my feeling is that the acceptance of our work became bigger and bigger and bigger in the last couple of years. So we shouldn't make no mistake. We know that maybe the majority of people are interested more in sports as an entertainment product, but the understanding of the background of sports is getting better. People are getting more critical, are having a different perspective, a different view, at least partially. That explains also, for example, why in some European countries people are really reluctant or hesitant if it comes to an Olympic bid. So there are referendums against Olympics in their entourage, in their area, in their region. And I guess one of the reasons is because people are getting more critical towards sports organizations.
Sports is kind of a closed environment, hard to get access to information. How important is whistleblowers, as you had when you were looking into Russia?
Very important. Without whistleblowers, it wouldn't have worked. So, very easy.
How do you get people to become whistleblowers?
As I said, we are a doping editorial team only focused on doping investigation. We get funded by ARD, so without this funding we wouldn't be able to do that. So we are able to travel, to meet people, we are able to gain trust on a longer, on a long-term relationship, which needs time. You have to talk to people, you meet them several times, you tell them what you can do, what you cannot do, you are always transparent, you are always open to them. And that's what we try to do. And people know that we are doing that. We are now, from my point of view, known not only in Germany but also in other countries. People know that ARD is doing doping investigation. And if they have concerns, it happens more and more that people come to us and tell us their story. So there is obviously, a kind of credit we have in the meantime. And people more and more want to deliver information, want to provide information if they see some failure, if they see some mismanagement in sports.
The future of sports, how hopeful are you?
if sports doesn't get control from the outside, I don't see that there is really a substantial change. What I see is that sports federation came under enormous pressure in the last couple of years, and they adopted some rules, they did some things for the good, which I have to appreciate. It's getting better because obviously the pressure, the public pressure was too high, which shows me that the impact of investigative and critical journalism is obviously not that small. So there is a change, but if it comes to the real substantial question, who has a power in sports, who maybe shares power with others, then we have the crucial point. And I see it in the moment that we are in a situation where more and more people ask the question if the current sports structures, which are now in place for decades and even more, if they are still the right tool, the right structure in which we should deal with sports matters. I'm not that sure. My feeling is that there needs to be more change, but it's very interesting to learn. I'm very curious to see how the development will be in the next couple of years.
Thank you very much for taking your time.
Thank you.
Veckans avsnitt var som vanligt producerat av Olle Junell Lindberg och klippt av Daniel Eriksson. Och vi tar gärna emot synpunkter, tankar, idéer, önskemål eller annat. Och enklast är att mejla mig, olof.lund@tv4.se, eller skriva till mig på Instagram eller Twitter, och då är det Olof Lund i ett ord som gäller. Stort tack för den här veckan!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.